Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora koutou. Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic and the chairperson of today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experiences, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. As I said, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the chair of this AA Wellington meeting on air, which is brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And with me in the studio, I'll get you to introduce yourselves.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I'm Ray. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ray.
Morning, everybody. Guy, alcoholic.
Hi, Guy. And thank you both for coming in on this middle day of a very long holiday weekend where the traffic I saw going up north yesterday showed that everybody is virtually has headed out of town and a good thing to have done. Now, I'd like to ask Ray, please, to read How It Works from the Big Book, pages 58 to 60.
Thanks, David. My name's Ray, I'm an alcoholic, and this is the reading from Chapter 5, entitled How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Ray. And I'm David. I'm the chair of this Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, which is coming to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. If you would like to contact AA at any stage during or after the meeting, you can get us at our 7 days a week, almost 24 hours a day, 0800 number, which is 0800 229 6757. That's 0800 229 6757, or the website, which has all the details you would ever like to see about Alcoholics Anonymous, including all of the times for meetings, 7 days a week, all over the country and all over Wellington. And that's at aa.org.nz. So aa.org.nz. Before I ask our guests here for sharing today, I will read the today's daily reflections from, it's April the 4th, from the Daily Reflections book. And it's actually very timely title for today's reflection, Crying for the Moon, given that we have the crew from the Artemis 2 spaceship on their way to the moon right now. Now, we have a very wide audience for this program. It's the podcast particularly is listened to all around the world. And we often get messages back from people saying hi from both round Wellington, round New Zealand, around the world. Maybe people up on their way to the moon are listening. Who knows? Anything's possible. Anyway, today's reflection, Crying for the Moon. This very real feeling of inferiority is magnified by his childish sensitivity, and it is this state of affairs which generates in him that insatiable abnormal craving for self-approval and success in the eyes of the world. Still a child, he cries for the moon. And the moon, it seems, won't have him. And this is from The Language of the Heart, page 102. And the reading goes on to say, while drinking, I seemed to vacillate between feeling totally invisible and believing I was the center of the universe. Searching for that elusive balance between the two has become a major part of my recovery. The moon I constantly cried for is, in sobriety, rarely full. It shows me instead its many other phases, and there are lessons in them all. True learning has often followed an eclipse, a time of darkness, but with each cycle of my recovery, the light grows stronger and my vision is clearer. And that's the April the 4th, Easter Saturday, reading from the Daily Reflections. And now we shall come to sharing, and I shall ask Guy if you could share your story with us today, please.
Oh, good morning, everybody. I'm Guy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
and I'm one of those young people that arrived in AA, totally cooked myself, and I arrived in AA in 1987, and it's quite some years ago now, and I arrived in a detox clinic, and there I dried out, and I was introduced to AA on a Friday night, and I was still in my pyjamas, which they give you when you arrive there in a detox clinic, which is, back in the 80s, is sort of normal type, you know, detoxing. And I went to my first AA meeting, and people spoke about their drinking and what happened to them and, you know, how they were now, and I could relate. And something happened to me there. A light went on, and I too was experiencing those same things those people were. You know, I was a blackout drinker. I often wake up and the bed was wet, and this was at a young age, you know, 13, 14 years of age. I would, drink so much, and I would, you know, black out, and I'd wake up and, yeah, the bed would be wet, and I'd wonder, you know, knew it was me, and I'd get embarrassed with my mother putting the mattress outside the front door, and I'd get home from school and knowing that I was the culprit, you know, seeing the mattress on the veranda, you know. I felt really embarrassed, you know, and I thought, I won't do it again. But it happened many times. I drank right through my teens, right to my early 20s, travelled to Australia, and there is where I ended up. I'd had enough, and I rang, and they said to me, you know, come in and we'll do an assessment. And then I was in the detox clinic. I could tell you a lot of things what happened to me, but, you know, often I'd arrive at work when I had a job, if I had a job, and the boss would sometimes say to me, you know, how was your weekend? And I would say, oh, it was okay. But I couldn't tell him the truth, you know. I couldn't say, you know, I went to bed, I end up in A&E, abused the neighbours, spent all my money. That to some people would be like, you're insane, you know. There's something wrong with you. And there was something wrong with me. So, yeah, I'm in the right place. As I said, come in at a young age and put the drink down. And AA introduced me to a plan of living, which I like to look at it as today, a long-term plan. And it kept me sober for many years now. You know, I had 39 years the other day. I clocked up sober, day at a time, through coming to this fellowship and doing the steps, 12 steps of AA. I don't need to go back and experiment to see if I'm an alcoholic or not. I know I am, and I'm okay with that. And, you know, it's a really progressive illness, you know. Many times I hear people come into AA and they go back drinking after 5, 10, 20, 30 years, and it's still the same. So, you know, I believe what those people tell me. You know, so I don't need to, you know, do anything experimenting for me to find out. So, yeah, I'm a really happy member of AA. I'm involved in service, sponsored a few people along the way. But most of all, it's kept me sober. You know, it may sound a wee bit selfish, but really that's how the AA program works. We must work with others, which keeps us sober. And if they get sober, that's good. So I haven't got too much more to say, but just it's a privilege to come here and talk today and to be part of the solution. You know, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thanks, Guy. Now, I'm David. I'm an alcoholic and I'm the chair of today's meeting, which is brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. I have been myself reading a very interesting book which has just come out, called Why Do We Drink? It's by a British surgeon called Dr. Charles Knowles. It's the subtitled The Hidden Science of Just One More. He describes how he had, you know, started drinking as a medical student, and even on the day of his first exams, before the results came out, he went out to celebrate so much that he had no recollection of the exam results, which fortunately for him he passed, because he went on to become quite a prominent surgeon, but so worried about his drinking that he went on to stop and join Alcoholics Anonymous, and went on to write to write this book. Now, in it, he does say many good things about Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'm desperately trying to find here, because I should have had the place marked earlier. But he says some there's some very interesting things about Alcoholics Anonymous, which I've learnt myself about how, AA works. There are many studies that have been done into the long-term sobriety of people who have used, various methods to stop drinking. And there was one quite well-known survey looking at hundreds of different studies done around the world that showed the length of sobriety with Alcoholics Anonymous and with cognitive behaviour therapy, which is one of the psychological methods used to help people with such things as alcoholism. And the studies had shown that after 12 months, about the same number of people were still sober with cognitive behaviour therapy as with AA membership, but by the time you got up to 18 and 24 months and beyond, the people attending AA meetings were substantially more likely to have remained sober. Studies like that really made an impression on me, because like a lot of other people who have become alcoholics, one wants to be able to stop and keep not drinking, and to know that by going to regular AA meetings, I can have a very good chance of not drinking and then continue to stay alive for a long time, hopefully. Now, I will read a little bit out of Dr. Charles Knowles' book, Why We Drink Too Much, just about Alcoholics Anonymous. I found one of his many pages on it. He talks quite a bit with statistics about AA and how he finds the meetings. This is from page 133 of his book, Why We Drink Too Much. Every day, all around the world, there will be people questioning their relationship with alcohol. Some may be joining online sober and grey area drinking communities, others doing Dry January. Some may be contemplating ringing the AA helpline, seeing their doctor, or booking themselves into rehab. All have reached a stage where, for one reason or another, they have concerns about their drinking. At this point, it is not unusual for people to consider how they got to where they are now, asking themselves the why me question. In many ways, this book is my continued personal attempt at this. To answer this question requires us to look at what might be different about us when we complain to people who seem able to drink without issue. For instance, the 5% of regular drinkers who progress to dependent drinking might question why the other 95% are able to enjoy a big night out but wake up in the morning without withdrawal symptoms. Similarly, when 60 to 80% of most Western populations drink regularly, why do only about 8 or 9% develop alcohol abuse disorder? Although many people have a strong sense that the pejorative childhood or adult life experiences have been important to the development of their current problems, discussions in both AA and grey area drinking communities is frequently framed around the idea that there may be a responsible bad gene in the family. Such opinion often derives from a mix of personal observation. For example, my father-in-law was an alcoholic, or there was always something different about me. But it is also reinforced by popular press headlines such as scientists discover drunk gene and binge drinking gene discovered. Taken together, we have the classical nature and nurture argument, one that rightly acknowledges that how we turn out as a human being in respect to our appearance, abilities and behaviour, as well as our susceptibility to disease, stems partly from our genetic makeup, but also from what life can throw at us, or we can throw at ourselves. Very few diseases or traits are caused entirely by the environment or by our genes. Classic genetic diseases, where the observed trait is categorically caused by variants, is a single gene. These are rare. Most, including just about all common medical problems, have a mix of both, with this mix being unique to each individual. The relevance of complex diseases or complex traits comes from acknowledgement that for each of us, our observed characteristics and behaviour are the products of our individual biology, including our genes, our psychological traits, and the effects of the environment, notably the human society we interact with. The three elements are tied together in what many epidemiologists call a biopsychological model, where the interdependence, that is, can affect one another. Alcohol-related disorders, along with nearly all mental health conditions, are near-perfect examples of complex traits. This means that when we come to study the why me question, we must try to disentangle the biology from other elements. Not unsurprisingly, finding a bad gene to account for observed biological differences is even harder. Now, I might later on read on where he talks specifically at some more length about AA, but we'll carry on with our sharing here, and I will ask Ray if you could please share with us.
Thanks, David. Yes, good morning, everyone. I'm still Ray, still an alcoholic. It's really good to be in this meeting this morning. It's a beautiful Wellington day on a long weekend, and really I wouldn't want to be doing anything else today. And I've been sober for 26 years. My sobriety date is the 29th of December 1999, and it's quite significant. Everyone in the world was talking with great excitement about the end of the year and the new millennium we were going into, and I really just wanted to jump off the planet, and I didn't want to be here. And that was a huge turning point for me. And the thought of, you know, actually being sober and upright and leaving my home fully dressed, fully showered at 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning was not part of my world at that time. I wouldn't have noticed the sun shining. I wouldn't have noticed the wind on my face. I just would have probably have had a hangover from the night before. I would have been sleeping in or just getting up and looking for the next drink. And that was really the sum total of my life. And I really enjoyed the readings today. We had a great reading from our Alcoholics Anonymous big book, The Daily Reflections, and also that lovely reading with a more scientific view. And I find that interesting as well. You know, we talk about this as well in our big book. It does talk about, you know, science hasn't found an answer for our alcoholism. We can't take a pill and make ourselves like other people. When I was much younger, I used to go out. I would see a couple of lovely sort of middle-aged women having lunch together on a Saturday with a glass of wine, and I wanted to be like that, and I couldn't. I pick up a glass of wine, I put it down when I can't stand up any longer or when I'm unconscious. And so I know if I drink, I can't stop. That's the science for me. It's like an allergy. And I know that, I think Charles probably talks about that in that book, and I know that's in the big book for us as well. And today I try and keep it simple, you know, because that is it. If I choose to drink, I will go into blackout, as our other speaker talked about. I could end up anywhere with anybody doing anything, and that's what I used to be like. I did most of my drinking, certainly towards the end of my life, in London, and I could wake up anywhere in London, and I didn't know what day it was, where I was, or who I was with. It was quite dangerous behaviour, and I can honestly say, at that time, I had no idea my life could be any different. I was actually 19 when somebody said to me, why don't you try getting up tomorrow and telling yourself you're not going to have a drink. That person sowed a seed in me that I didn't want to hear at that time. I know that today. And it took me another 15 years to find my way into Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober. And those 15 years mostly weren't pleasant. I used to think I was the life and soul of the party, and I used to think that everyone behaved like I did, but it wasn't like that. I think a lot of people would have probably been laughing at me. And as I got older, my drinking became dangerous for others to be around, and I didn't get invited to people's parties. People dropped away, family, friends, life dropped away from me. And I was quite a public sort of hotel, pub and club drinker. Yeah, I could end up in the gutter, and, you know, that was my life. I was a daily drinker, a daily top-up drinker, and I just loved the effect. I drank for the effect of taking me away from this world, away from my worries, and I felt like other people when I had a drink inside of me. I lost my shyness, I lost my awkwardness, by the time I was at the end of my drinking, there was just nothing left. Alcohol stripped everything away from me, and I kind of crawled my way into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even want to be there. I was pushed through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous by a family member. I'm very grateful for that today. I didn't want to be there at the time. I didn't think that my problem was drinking. I thought I was drinking because I had lots of other problems. And that was the point at which I discovered I couldn't stop. And whether I wanted to or not, I actually couldn't. And it took me a good couple of months to sober up. And yes, I finally threw in the towel and managed to start stringing some days together at the end of 1999. So, yeah, I have recently celebrated 26 years. Gosh, it would be wonderful to say it was all, you know, unicorn, fairy, kittens, rainbows, but it wasn't. You know, life happens. But today I'm equipped with the tools to actually get through life a day at a time, and that's all I've got to focus is what I've got to do today, what's happening around me today, what's going on that I need to deal with, but I don't have to pick up a drink to deal with any of those things. And today I actually choose not to. I choose not to drink, and it's a really great place to be. Yes, it's interesting what it said in Charles's book there. You know, people can stay sober, people can stay away from a drink, but for me, for this alcoholic, I need the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need the meetings, I need other people. I couldn't do this on my own, I couldn't sober up on my own, I certainly couldn't stay long-term sober on my own. I need to have others around me, I need to hear your story so that I can say, yes, that was me as well, and remember where I came from. Today I feel really well. Today it's very easy to forget that that was me. So I do need to remember where I came from. I need to remember wetting the bed. I need to remember waking up on the other side of London with no idea of how I was going to get home and not knowing what day it was. Those things I do need. It's a very, very important reminder to me. Today I'm a functioning member of the community. I go to work, I go to meetings, I sponsor people, and you know, I keep my life as simple as I possibly can. And you know, for me, this works. This really works. And you know, I always say to people out there, you know, if you're struggling or you think you might have a drinking problem, come along to a meeting, come and meet some of us, and you'll find out whether you want it or not. There's no rules here. I think that's why we all stay, isn't it? Because there's no rules. I don't have to fill in a joining form. I can just turn up and put as much in or as little in as I would like. You know, we're encouraged to work the steps and get a sponsor. I know for me that doing that was life-changing. It gave me the ability to look at my past and you know, not get rid of it, but be able to, it lessens the power. I'm not ashamed of the things I did when I was drinking. You know, we're sick people. This is an illness. We're sick. We're not bad, trying to get good. We're sick and we're trying to get well. And on a daily basis, that's what we do, you know. And just for this 24 hours, you know, I can stay sober, I can do it. And that's really important to me. And, you know, yes, I'm a very happy customer as well, you know. And thanks so much for having me in the meeting this morning. And, yeah, give us a ring on the 0800 number, everyone. If you need a bit of help, we are here. And we love meeting new people. And, yes, that's me. I've probably rambled on enough. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Ray. Now, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the chair of today's Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air, which is brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And that 0800 number that Ray's invited you to call is 0800 AA Works, or with the actual numbers, 0800-229-6757. It's 0800-229-6757. And you can also go to the AA website to find out, you know, where to find your local meetings. AA meetings are all over Wellington, all over the whole of New Zealand, all over probably almost every country in the world. And you can find the New Zealand ones on aa.org.nz. That's aa.org.nz. Now, as I said, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and your chair for the meeting today, and I've got a bit of time to fill in here. Let me just get out the book here for one moment. I'm just going to briefly refer again to, not to the AA Big Book, which Ray might read you a section from presently, but from a new book by the British surgeon, Dr. Charles Knowles, which has just come out. It's published by Macmillan Publishers, and it's called Why We Drink Too Much, subheading The Hidden Science of Just One More. And in this book, Dr. Charles Knowles has quite a bit to say about Alcoholics Anonymous, but this was one section in it that stood out for me. And he describes various interesting things. He says, I'll quote from the book here, "Alcoholics Anonymous is open to anyone who wants to stop drinking, but it is generally and incorrectly viewed as the preserve of the dependent drinker. Actually, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. AA now has 118,000 groups worldwide, with approximately 2 million regular attendees in 180 countries. There are 856 meetings per week in London alone." So you can tell from that, of course, he's a British doctor writing about British things there. But anyway, he goes on to say, "The AA Big Book is one of the top-selling books of all time and has a place among only 88 listed books that have shaped America in the US Library of Congress. Going on to quote from Charles's book, "Until fairly recently, critics were able to argue that AA used its tradition of anonymity to cover up its outcomes, which by inference they claim must be poor. Following a call in 1990 for more rigorous research into the 12-step programs by the United States National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, several randomized trials put this criticism to bed. Reviews that have emerged, the trial results show that AA performs at least as well and in many instances better than cognitive behavior therapy and other psychological interventions. One example evaluated 35 high-quality studies from 5 countries involving the work of 145 scientists and the outcomes of 10,080 participants. Its main conclusion was that AA was almost always more effective than psychotherapy in achieving abstinence. In addition, most studies showed that AA participation lowered healthcare costs. The latter finding is not surprising, considering AA costs the health insurance companies and government services nothing whatsoever. It has been described in one scientific paper as the closest thing we have to a free lunch in public health. Research studies aside, we can make another important scientific observation. It derives from the well-established concept of ongoing useful benefit as a surrogate of effectiveness. That is, people don't carry on with treatments that require time and effort unless they feel the treatments are working. Anyone who has abandoned a prescription drug knows this, me included. AA has been around for 80 years with a program that has remained basically unchanged from the year it was first started. It has survived. Put simply, it would have gone the way of snake oil and bloodletting if it didn't work. Several major US health providers endorse and provide a link to AA on their websites as an alternative to contacting your physician for alcohol problems. So it's getting a confirmation like this in a newly published book by, a medical expert who's, you know, become an alcoholic himself and sought treatment and found AA, that makes me realise that, you know, AA is something that does work, and that I find, you know, myself, I, you know, very much needed to stop drinking because doctors told me I would die if I didn't, and which is a pretty, good reason to stop drinking. And I've been ever since, you know, regularly attending AA meetings, and where you can get all kinds of extraordinary support from the people there, just at your local community level. And I've seen people at these meetings, you know, turn up on their first day, second day, third day sober, and going on. You'll see them a week later, and a month later, a year later. It's quite extraordinary. Just think that, and then at the meetings, there are people who, you know, have been there far longer than me. So you find people that have been there for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and they keep on coming, for the reason being that that keeps them sober, and by this regular attendance. So if you would like to find an AA meeting near you, and they're, you know, 7 days a week throughout most of the country, just telephone 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website, aa.org.nz. Now, I've asked Ray if she could find a reading from the big book, and so I could hand this back to her for that. Yeah. Thank you, Ray.
Thanks, David. So I'm going to go from one book to another book. I'm going to go back to our book of Alcoholics Anonymous, published in 1939 and not written by anybody scientific. This was written by two people who were alcoholics, finding their way through. They started these meetings in 1935, so they were sort of 3-4 years sober between them when they wrote this book. And I'm going to read just a quick page from chapter 3, more about alcoholism, and I think it just sums up what we've been sharing this morning. So here we go. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterised by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralisation. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be, excuse me, any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. And I absolutely love that little reading because it just sums up rather a lot about me. And it goes on to talk after that reading about, as well, the ways we try and change our drinking in order to prove to ourselves that we can either control it or we're not alcoholic. So I do recommend it. It's recommended reading for all of us. Thanks, David. Back to you.
Thanks, Ray. And this is the Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And I'm David, I'm the alcoholic who's the chair of today's meeting. And just to take up on, the section that Ray was reading from the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, one of the main features that Alcoholics Anonymous, say to people who, newly arrive is that, it might seem quite scary to think that, you've got to stop drinking and you may not be able to drink next week or next month or next year. And, a lot of people I've met as they have, first come into the meeting, they just can't imagine how they'll ever not drink again, but they know they have to stop drinking now. Otherwise, their health will deteriorate or, they'll lose their jobs or their families or they'll just die. And so Alcoholics Anonymous say that you just don't have to drink today and, don't worry about tomorrow or the day after if that's worrying you too much. You just don't need to drink today. And I, tell myself on some days when I get up, I just don't have to drink today. Let's not worry about tomorrow. But, I'm going to an AA meeting at 7:30 tonight and I'm certainly not going to... I'd be too embarrassed to turn up there drunk, even though I know I'd still be welcomed. But I don't have to drink today and it will get me through it. And a lot of people in my experience at AA have, followed this and got through the first day, a second day, a week. Eventually, if you've been a heavy drinker, it can be, still have cravings for alcohol, but they eventually disappear. And it gets to the stage, or at least I can only speak for myself, but just the thought of it doesn't even occur to me to drink alcohol any longer. And I'm certainly not, which is quite a difference to how things used to be. So, anyway, this is one of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, we are getting towards the end of this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air for Easter Saturday, and I would like to ask Guy, please, to read the AA promises. Guy.
The AA promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'd be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realise that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialise if we work for them. And that's page 83 to 84 of the Big Book.
Thanks, Guy, and thanks, Guy and Ray, for coming in on this Easter Saturday for our meeting.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.